I would say the thing that definitely helps is when your volume doesn't allow you to be kind of in the weeds like that, and you have to take a step back just because of sheer workload. I wasn't having all that much of a positive impact by jumping in on things that it was really eye-opening, and realizing that your folks are capable. And if they're not capable, then either you're doing something wrong as a leader, or you've put them in a spot not to succeed.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Lawrence Fitzpatrick, Senior Vice President, Deputy Business Unit Head at the Lero Group. And now that I formally introduce you as Lawrence, I can call you Larry. Larry, how are you?
Going really well, Eric. Thank you. It's actually interesting to hear you call me Lawrence instead of Larry. Definitely a nice little twist.
Yeah, so I always, the introductions, I like to be formal, and always say thank you. And I know we're kind of joking here, but I really do appreciate you doing this, so.
Yeah, of course. I'm really excited to be here. I've listened to a lot of episodes, like we've talked, and just happy to be a part of it.
Well, that was what's so exciting. Like, we're grabbing lunch and we're having that conversation, maybe it might be. And again, time just flies, right? What was that? Might have been like 6 months ago or something. I
That
might
was,
have
I
been
think
more.
that was right around September.
Yeah.
That
So
was,
maybe
yeah,
more.
that was a while back.
And we're having that conversation at lunch, and I'm like, I almost say, do you watch Seinfeld? There's like George and Jerry are trying to figure out what they should make the show about. He's like, this is it. This should be the show. And that's how I felt at lunch that day. I was like, this is it. This should be the
Yeah. And then they tried to
show.
sell that and it didn't go so well.
We always start every episode with some good news and gratitude. So I'll ask you, is there any like personal or professional good news you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, actually, so personal, my sister just had a baby within the last couple of months, so her first one. So it's been fairly exciting to watch her as a mother and having the infant around. It's been a nice blessing.
That's so cool. And the beauty of it, of being an uncle, is that when they need a
Oh,
diaper
yeah.
change, you can hand them right off.
Right off the handoff, I get to do all the spoiling and then hand off, and it's a nice change.
I have a brother too, and my sister obviously, so and I have two kids, and yeah, they're great about coming over to hang out.
That's what our role is. We
It
have to.
probably ends there, so that's good enough. But
Yeah,
no,
we.
it's a lot of fun. Have you been over there and you saw the baby a
Oh,
lot, or
it's
what's it? Yeah.
awesome. Yeah, we go over there every weekend just to, make sure everything's okay and get the baby all riled up, and then I leave and good
That's
time.
awesome. On show days, I always my gratitude for you being a guest. I know how busy you are, and it's gonna be an awesome conversation. I'm excited about it, so thank you for that. And I'll share like another just like personal, I always like to find a gratitude. We practice this every morning almost. So I'll say, my dad and I went to an event recently around education, and it was really like eye-opening to hear them speak about education in a way where they were really about empowering and high expectations. And it's an interesting story about the fact that like apparently, one in four kids across the country are like failing in school. Like, we don't do a great job of doing that. And just like the power of positivity, but also challenging students, right? Like, letting them know that that's not okay. And I guess in some places, because those are the metrics, there, that's the statistic, So I guess, I guess all in, that'll be a gratitude, really to my family and to my teachers growing up, because I always felt very positive in the environments I was learning in, from kindergarten up through 12th grade. And being at that event the other day really showed me that that's not a reality for a lot of kids. Their home lives maybe don't have the same level of support, and they're their schooling system doesn't have the same level of educational support, and that's tough for them.
It's very eye-opening what positivity in a in any scenario can bring about as far as improved performance. And positivity in schooling, I feel like, has gone away for a lot of years, and it really needs to come back because that's where people perform.
Totally agree. All right, cool. Let's jump into our conversation. I always like to
Yeah, let's
start
do it.
with background on you. So tell us about yourself. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? What did you do before you started working for Lero? And then, tell us a little bit about what you do now.
Yeah, so grew up, I'm a Bronx kid, born and raised. Family relocated north during high school years, but always stayed very connected to the Bronx. Still have a lot of family there, were there often. Actually got into construction at a very young age. So my dad and family were all blue collar folks in the trades, metal lathers and carpenters and steam fitters, et cetera. So, right around 15 or 16, my dad said, "All right, it's time to get a job." So, I'm sweeping floors at job sites, really working for a residential builder, a buddy of his. I think that was the summer that I turned 16, and then it really evolved from there. By the time I was, so I started at 16, really not knowing anything, and by the time I was in college, I was putting myself through college and working for the builder still, and I was running crews for him. So by the time I was 19, 20, I was running residential crews, building houses in like Bedford and Greenwich, Connecticut, which is a pretty affluent area. And this red-haired, red-faced 19-year-old was showing up telling them what we were going to do for them. And I didn't have any clue what we were going to do. So yeah, construction started at a really, really young age. Went to school, majored in marketing and finance, actually. Thought for sure I was going to move my way out of the construction industry. And then when I graduated right around 2002, and that was right when the financial collapse was all, very prevalent, and there just weren't a whole lot of jobs out there. And I made it about 45 days without having a job, and then I landed back in construction. And you know what? It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because I don't know that I was ever built to just sit behind a desk and talk finance. So it was a nice change. And I started working for a general contractor at that age, right around 22. Same sort of evolution, started helping out, and next thing running, we did a lot of restaurants and retail. So I was doing a lot of Cheesecake Factories. I did the Grand Lux out on Long Island, and evolved from there, and then found my way on a Lero job site, and Lero scooped me up and started as a superintendent, and here I am, senior VP of and deputy business unit head. So been with Lero now since 2009. They've been great to me. Lots of opportunity and chances to evolve, which is what I really wanted.
Yeah, and great company. And, we're fortunate to do some work with you guys. And, obviously being a Long Islander, I've known Lero probably most of my entire life. And my dad goes way back with a lot of the senior folks there. And good firm. And always love that about you guys. What I learned about you this year, I didn't know was, so you went to school for finance and marketing. I had that part I didn't know. The rest of your story, I kind of had some idea. That's so interesting. And so was, you said you're probably where you belong, which is probably, I would agree. But what was the path then? You thought you'd work for like a big bank or an investment bank or something, or go into
Yeah,
finance?
I think so. I think it was more just, I don't even know that there was really a path. It was more, I would say, kind of the way of the generation. So I came from a generation of folks that didn't really go and evolve their education beyond anything beyond high school. So it was always, go to school and get an education. It was never focused on what the education was. And at that time, I just kind of landed in finance, and I just thought it was the right path. And fortunately, that didn't work out, because I don't think it would have been.
Well, yeah, so tell us, so you're deep rooted in construction, right? So what do you see as someone that's seen the whole spectrum, right? From what you just described, from sweeping floors all the way up to SVP, right? How would you describe what like a really great construction management leader does? And I'll actually the way I'll ask this question is like, what did you see early on in your career when you weren't in charge and you thought like, hey, that's a great leader in what they're doing? And maybe some of like, what do you do today to try to hopefully be that leader now that, now that you're in the position of leadership?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because I think the principles of leadership apply across many, many platforms, and they all have like this, I won't call them basic premises, but they have the same essential premises, you know, taking ownership of things, taking your ego and emotion out of it, empowering others, you know, stay humble, stay patient, stay detached from decisions so your emotions can't get in the way. I would say as a young man, I was probably too immature to realize any of those, but I noticed early on that the good leaders were the ones that led by example. So the folks were very willing to follow them in anywhere they went. And I think that still applies today, you know, showing your folks that you'll be ready, willing, and able to jump in at a moment's notice and be side by side with them as they're going through the challenging endeavors. I think the generations have evolved too, where we're probably a lot better about communicating about things now. You know, that our industry in general was a pretty rough and tumble one where, you know, they weren't having open and honest conversations. So I would say, you know, our generation, mine and yours, is at a little bit of an advantage where we can openly speak about the challenges that we're having on all sides to better align towards, you know, project completion or finishing the mission or, you know, aligning in that common goal that we both have that we don't even realize we have.
Yeah, I shared a quote last week. It was actually a quote Friday, and it was, "Be the leader you wish you had," you know. And I think a lot of those things you're talking about are true. And I actually talked a little bit exactly about that, the evolution of the industry, right? Like, it used to be being hard and cold was what you had to be as to be a leader. Like, not even that you wanted to be that way, but it was just what was expected of you. And almost if you were soft as a leader, people like didn't want to respect you or listen to you. You know, like, it's weird how that culture shift is. But today I agree with you. I mean, what the right path to leadership is, you got to be open, you got to be honest, there's got to be some transparency. So I think it's really interesting for you to talk about it in the arc of your own career, you know.
Yeah, and even going back to that, it's reminded me of a story that happened early in my career running a pretty large project. I was in way over my head. I was probably about 23 years old, and all of a sudden I had, you know, 35 carpenters that were all reporting to me, and they knew way more than I did. And I just happened to be in the position. So I was taking a very reserved approach. I was letting folks get away with too much, to be honest. And then one day the pressure was on me, and I popped off a little bit and lost it a little bit in our daily job meeting. And everybody left and went and did their things. And one of the older guys that I have a lot of respect for came up to me afterwards. He's like, "It was about time you did that, kid." I was like, "Well, what do you mean, Patsy?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Everybody was thinking you were soft. You had to let them know that you had a little bit of a backbone." So I realized that, you know, maybe that I won't even call it evolution, but just understanding when it is okay to stand your ground and prove your point and know that it's the right direction as opposed to just letting people kind of bully you out of the way. So.
There's a fine line between being like, I don't want to use the word soft, but like, you know, soft in a leadership sense and being a pushover. Because if you let people push you over, they're never going to do what you need, right? So they need to, like you said, like, they need to know you have a backbone too, and that it's not okay to just constantly do the wrong thing. But it is okay to open up and talk to you if they have a question or not sure how to proceed on something or, you know,
Yeah, absolutely.
or
It's that life balance that we deal with every single
yeah.
day, when to push and when to pull.
Well, so, you know, I want to talk a little bit, you know, we talked about your career arc and, you know, you run a fairly large client, right? For Lero. And you talked to me a little bit previously about how, like, the way that came about was, you know, you built trust with that client and that owner over time. And I think it'd be great to hear about that, right? Like, what does it take to earn trust from a client, especially when, you know, you're working on a lot of high visibility projects and they might also be reluctant, right? Like, they're like, "Hey, you know, these five are the guys who have done it for me for 50 years. I'm not going to be the one to shake it up or change it up, you know?"
Yeah. I mean, we all see it often. Anytime we undertake a new endeavor with a new client, and you know, looking back, and it, again, only until I was able to look back into it to see the things that led to success. But it, I mean, you have to stick to your word. If you say you're going to do something, you need to do it. and then know whatever you're promising to deliver on that you can actually execute, because delivery falls short in execution. You could walk around saying you're going to do things all day long. If you can't execute, that's where you fail. So the execution is key. And then consistency. You know, if you're always consistent with your messaging, with your intent, and being genuine, then the relationships tend to grow from there. And I've had client relationships where I thought it was going to take years and years and years to develop trust. And then the job site, you know, throws you one curveball and you gain that trust in the first 30 days. And then other clients, it takes a couple of years because the job is running smoothly and everything's okay. And there hasn't been a real scenario for people to peel the curtain back and make sure that you're doing the right thing. So it really is just about consistency and doing what you say you're going to do.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think the consistency in delivering on what you say is the most important part, and that transcends like all relationships. You know, it's
Absolutely.
even like employee boss, right? Like mentor, mentee,
Perfect
and the personal
example.
relationships too.
Yeah, if you tell your folks you're going to get them a promotion and an increase, and then 12 months later you still haven't done it, it's not a great look.
It's
So
hard for
folks,
them. Yeah.
and then the trust is compromised, and then the next 12 months is a different conversation. So.
It's hard. And so when you're looking at some of these, like, you know, large projects, I know some are infrastructure, some are renovations, right? What do you find to be like the most critical part of how they impact the communities you build them in, you know? And maybe you have a project example. Like, is there a project you want to talk about that you've kind of worked on that you're like, that one really impacted the community in this way?
Yes. So we recently, in the past couple of years, we were fortunate enough to work on an armory project for New York National Guard. And it wasn't necessarily when the project was done, but it was during construction. So the way National Guard armories are set up, there's different units that are all occupying the same building. So they all have a different function and different responsibility. But throughout construction, we would get a lot of visitors coming in. And one of the most impactful ones was we got a bunch of folks from the middle of the state came down to visit the site, and we had a walkthrough of the whole building. And at one point, one of the soldiers turned to me and said something along the lines, "We had just walked through a new bathroom and a locker room space." And he turned and he just said, he goes, "I can't tell you how excited our guys are to have a bathroom and a locker room that's new and doesn't have the ceiling falling down."
Wow.
And it was just, you know, we did all that, and that's just one story. And then when we did the ribbon cutting, there were about 200 soldiers there, and you know, Major General Shields came down, and we had this enormous ribbon cutting, which is a really beautiful event. And at the close of the ribbon cutting, they sang the Army song, about 200 soldiers in the middle of the space that we just renovated, singing the Army song. It was really, I mean, I'm getting chicken
Chills.
skin just thinking
Yeah.
about it. Yeah, that I would say that one's the one.
That's a really cool project, and the impact is probably like amazing. Because some of those, and I don't know about that facility in particular, but I know I've been in some facilities that they're really run down. It's just like they've needed the upgrades for decades, you know. And people are just, there's some VA hospitals we've worked on. VA hospitals, you get there and you're like, this is sad. Like I'm excited to be part of this, and I'm excited to do this, but I just wish that they never had to experience it to begin with, you know.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So yeah, having the opportunity to have those conversations with, you know, soldiers that have been in the guard for a long time, that's been a fun experience of working with the M&A.
That's awesome. Have you had any projects that have like kind of changed you as a leader, like personally? Anything that's like I now do this differently because of that project?
I would say every project, honestly, and it sounds a bit cliche, but I think every project teaches you something, whether it be the folks that you're the personality types that you're dealing with on that project and how to manage that, or a construction element that you haven't dealt with before. I would say every project is a good opportunity to learn. Most recently, I think, you know, we all lived through it quite a bit, but during COVID and all the challenges that we all had as managers and in delivering in that environment. And so that could be a major example. And then a minor one is an example about reporting that, a couple of weeks ago, thought the messaging was very clear, thought we had a great structure in our reporting, and just realized that the audience that was receiving the message just wasn't understanding the message. So it could be those little ones, or it could be major changes, but all lead to being a better leader and improving on what you did yesterday.
Yeah, I particularly liked what you said about the messaging, right? Because so often, and I don't know this particular story, but I'm thinking from my lens is like, a lot of things are done via email, and we just all have so much email fatigue that if I think a lot
Yes.
of things just get like lost, and so the messaging to the audience and multiple touch points, and sometimes also explaining to them how it impacts them or impacts. Whatever the structure is a great one. I like that you call them the audience, because that is probably the best general term for it.
It really is. And the audience can be, it could be anybody. It could be the whole team. It could be the client, it could be subs, it could be primes, it could be designers. Whoever is reading the message that you're providing, you have to make sure that you're providing it in a way that they understand it, not that you understand it.
One of the things we talk a lot about, like you and I, has always been about the younger professionals and how do we bring them up. And so I want to ask you about that, because I know you have a couple on your team that you're like, Eric, these are the next rock stars of the industry.
Yeah.
And how do you help them like build that confidence in those high pressure situations? Or how do you get them to know it's okay to have a backbone, right? Like you sounded like you had your own, mentor that helped you lead and learn at that time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so I never knew until I got to the latter part of my career, or where I am in my career now. There's still a few years left, but how much that I would enjoy the mentoring of our business and the opportunity that it provides. Like, not to be dramatic, but we're essentially, changing the path of lives, and we're given the opportunity to do that. And it's something I take a lot of pride in. I would say my style has evolved over the years with folks on our team. The biggest thing that has always helped us is the debrief and sitting down, whether it be after a meeting. So with young professionals that are new in their careers, I would literally sit them down and say, "Okay, tell me what you didn't understand in that meeting." And this isn't a quiz or a test, but let's steer into the things that were confusing to you. Like, one thing that is interesting, our industry has a lot of acronyms and terms, and we just say them like they just roll off our tongue. So a lot of the young professionals that are starting out, and sometimes they're afraid to ask. So when you have these debriefs and you create an environment where it's okay to talk about things and ask questions, then all of a sudden the evolution starts to happen so quickly, right? Because the questions just start to flow. Sometimes the debrief can take longer than the meeting could, but that's where the real value is, because at that very next meeting, they're now applying all the lessons that they had from the previous meeting. And if you have a 3-year project, all of a sudden you have a manager that was very green to a manager that is excellent.
I love this idea of a debrief, and in on one of our teams, we do have like this sheet of acronyms for the industry, because like you said, like half the time we're talking in acronyms. Like if you don't understand the acronyms, you have no idea, because everything else is just filler words. So I don't know what they're talking about at all. But I never thought of a true debrief, and it kind of circles back to your original what we talked about in terms of leadership, right? Is like. Probably when we were first coming up, like I remember, like one of my first projects ever, I had this hardcore old school superintendent. I was a college educated kid. I should know everything coming out of college. Like he was that way, and he did not want to help. He had no interest in answering my questions. But I gotta tell you, he's probably one of the best builders I've ever seen. Like that guy knew everything. He knew everything about the contract. He knew the spec. He knew the owner better than the owner knew themselves. He knew what they would approve in change orders. He knew how to get the change order he wanted approved. It was like he was a mastermind. But you're opening up that door, and like where I know I keep using this term soft leadership, and it's not a good one, but this let's call it transparent or open leadership. And you're allowing them to debrief, and I think that's like so cool. I think you wanted to say something there. Sorry, I got stuck on a
Yeah,
rant.
no, just piling on the debrief conversation. It's not only for them, but it's also for our managers and me specifically. talking about messaging and making sure we're clear in the messaging with the it's the perfect sample set, the young professionals in our industry, because if we're not explaining it in a way that the young professionals who are still gaining their experience can understand, then the messaging could have quite well gone over the heads of the other people we were explaining it to. So, sitting down and I would always open the meetings of kind of analyzing the conversation as a whole, like what went well, what didn't go well, and then what messages do we think got across? What do we have to steer into more? And then what did you understand versus what did you not understand? So it's a real great opportunity. And then also that what evolves from that as well is just the growth of the trust of your team, knowing that you're there to support them in every step of the way.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
Yeah, and I can only imagine it probably really helps you also, like you said earlier, about delivering the message for the audience that's receiving it. You're probably learning a lot, right? In every debrief. Now, next time you have
Absolutely.
another younger, new employee or new trainee or something, you're like, oh, I know I have to explain this because the last time I did this, three people didn't get it. And it wasn't their fault. It was my fault, right? I didn't communicate the message.
Absolutely.
Very cool. And so as you're doing that, right? And this is something I kind of struggle with sometimes is how do you know when to then step in or let them kind of learn on their own, right? Because you want to empower them and you've given them the tools and like, and I can't tell you the number of times I've probably like caught myself tr starting to say something or starting to write an email response. I'm like, wait, I need to let them handle it because they can do it, right? I just got to give them time. But how do you figure out when is it time for you to step in and or not?
That was still learning, to be honest. The initial instinct is yes, exactly like you said. Jump in. Here's the right answer. Here's how I'm supporting the team. All right, we're on to the next thing. But in reality, it sets them back when you do that because they don't learn from it. And then the client realizes that maybe, it almost takes away their empowerment, by you stepping in and stepping on their toes. The client has to be confident, and quite frankly, the whole team has to be confident in the ability of the team member. And by me jumping in and with the right answer, it makes it look like they don't have the answer. So it's taken me, I'm still learning it every single day. I would say the thing that definitely helps is when your volume doesn't allow you to be kind of in the weeds like that, and you have to take a step back just because of sheer workload. That definitely helped me for well, forced me to be better. And then once I realized that and I started taking that step back and realizing that I wasn't having all that much of a positive impact by jumping in on things, that it was really eye-opening, and realizing that your folks are capable. And if they're not capable, then either you're doing something wrong as a leader or you've put them in a spot not to succeed.
Yeah, I think that's all like really, really important because letting them take the first shot or letting them figure out the answers is the only way you're going to figure out if they're good in their role, right? It's
Yes.
otherwise, if you keep answering questions for them and then 6 months down the road, you're like, oh, that guy doesn't know anything. Why do we even have him? And it's like, well, it's your own fault. Like you didn't give
Yeah.
him a chance or her a chance to know anything or to really prove themselves. So you mentioned their high volume of work, right? Like, and I know I can only imagine how busy you are and how many different projects you've got your hands in different teams. So do you have some like specific like systems or routines or how do you make sure your team stay organized, that you stay organized, accountable? What's that look like for you?
So it all depends on the project and the client base. I mean, we have our standard operating procedures that we adhere to, and that's kind of the roadmap, and you let it evolve from there. The biggest success that I've had in organization is just using all the electronic tools that we have in between, emails and OneNote and flagging things. And I won't say there's a perfect answer for every scenario. I would say I have a big toolbox, and depending on what the organization that's needed, I break out that tool and I use it for that particular organization. Sometimes you break out the wrong tool and you realize three quarters of the way through that, it's not as efficient or as organized as it can be, but you kind of adapt and let it evolve. But yeah, I use it all from my walk around daily notebook that I write down in, my OneNote in on the laptop, the flagging emails and unread emails and foldering things, and I always know where to look to find the answers, that's for sure.
Well, I think organization is key, but I want to go back to what something you said earlier in the answer, which was, you have the SOPs and you kind of evolve from there. And what does that structure look like for you? Is that like, do you have them like formally documented SOPs, or are they like more like anecdotal where you're telling people the process, or?
Yeah, so we have within Lero, we have our corporate management strategy. That is our, like I said, the roadmap that we then evolve and refine for each project and each client base. And then the more you work with your clients, you get to evolve and perfect that management strategy. So having that basic roadmap and then just growing off of that.
And is that like, do the like, and I'm going to talk about this from the perspective of young leaders, right? Because it sounds like that's who really needs it. Do they like, is it like a PDF they get a copy of? If is it something that lives on like online on a website, or like how do they interact with it?
So everything we have is through our, our server and our intranet that all employees have access to. It's all the guidelines and procedures that they need. If they wanted to follow the steps from A to Z, they can, and that could get you to a successfully completed project without kind of the human element that makes it better. I would say it's a series of processes, procedures, and checklists to just make sure that you have the ability to reference back and make sure you're not missing anything.
I think it's great, and the reason I'm asking so many questions about this is the last like probably 2 years now, we've been on that journey. So we've documented. I think this morning, because we had our leadership meeting this morning, it was like over 120 or something processes, and now we're working on how do we distribute it to the right people in a timely manner, right? Because not everyone needs every process, or not every person is working with the same clients, right? Like you mentioned, you kind of have a it sounds like a client or corporate management strategy, so. I'm always interested in that, right? Because our goal from leadership is, and you said it earlier, to put people in the right seat to succeed. But to do that, we have to equip them with the right tools and the right information. And if you don't do it in a standardized way, everyone's kind of getting different piecemeals of different information, doing it differently. And then as a manager, right, in high volume work environments, you can't really set like a baseline or understand like how to compare two different, projects because they're just so different. It's like, okay, I just have to fully understand this, and then I have to fully understand this and how they're operating because they're not doing it the same.
Yes, and there are certain things that you really don't need to reinvent the wheel on. Whether it's internal payment processes, how you do our invoicing, or where it gets submitted. Having that standard. Here's the five bullet points of the process that you can provide to a project manager, and they know exactly who to send the invoice to, exactly when it's due, who to copy on it, and what the subsequent steps are. So. And then also as leaders and managers, to be able to have, I keep calling it a roadmap, but to be able to hand out that roadmap gives everybody a great head start on executing.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I'm hoping, we'll get to that place soon. And we've seen it be successful in certain things, right? That like we have really had a lot of success in streamlining. But there's still some places where we're growing. And but it sounds like you guys have it nailed down, and that's awesome. And it's glad to hear a success story too about that. Because sometimes, like we all do, right? You do too. Like you said, you take a tool out of the toolbox, and sometimes it's the right one, sometimes it's not. And this is one of those like we think this is the right way to do it, and we hope it is. But we won't really know until we get to the end of it.
Application. Once you put it into application, that's when you know if it's working or not. And honestly, sometimes we overanalyze things by trying to get them perfect on paper. And I mentioned it earlier, but the human element, giving folks the ability to make decisions and evolve the base premise of the process. It makes it better, right? Like they know they could read 10 bullet points and know that maybe they only have to hit three steps to get to the same deliverable because all the bullet points kind of come together. So, you could spend years and years and years trying to get it perfect on paper, but the only way it gets perfect is by the people executing.
No, for sure. So one of the things I had a note on, I didn't say, but congrats, right? You recently promoted, so that was a big day, very exciting. It actually leads me into a topic I want to talk to you about is promotions can be difficult sometimes because, you're so good at the role you're in, right? And like then it's like, hey, how do I take this next step? And so what's like, how are you trying to approach it? What are some mistakes you've seen other people make when they've stepped into a senior level role? And like, how are you trying to either avoid those mistakes or maybe learn from them? Tell me a little bit about that journey from, your prior role, which you were probably super comfortable in, and your new role, which you're probably also very comfortable in, but is new, right? Like, it's just natural for it to be new.
Yeah, I think the couple of things that I've learned through growing in the company is and taking on more responsibility is one, how to properly delegate. Delegation is key because obviously this new role will come with a whole host of other responsibilities and something has to adjust, right? I'm probably not in the BMS spec knowing exactly what the sequence of operation is on a particular project, but I have to know that there is a sequence of operations. So,
Yeah, and
kind
someone
of
knows
directive.
it.
And somebody knows, right? So I would say delegation has been the key thing. And I won't even talk about others. I'll talk about me, but being open to learning, and I always have been, which I think is very important, knowing full well that there will be things within this new role that one I've never done before and I need to learn how to do it. And it's going to take time to learn how to do it right and better. So just being excited about it has really helped me over the years, and it's one that I've been working hard towards. So kind of taking that opportunity to drink it in, and then it's a new challenge. All right, let's learn and be better and be a better manager. And by me being better, it makes all our folks better, makes the company better. It's just, the rising tide.
It's like the championship mentality, right? Like you work hard all season to win a championship, and when you do, the next day the off season starts all over again and you're ready for the next season,
Right back to training.
Yeah.
You go out, you have a celebratory dinner, and the very next day you're back in the gym.
Well, we still haven't had our celebratory, so we got to get that on the calendar, so we will. But
We will, for sure.
I did congratulate you, and I think it's super exciting and
Yeah,
great for
very
Hero,
much
great for
appreciate.
you. Love it.
Yeah, and I appreciate Lero just giving me the opportunity to take on this role. They've afforded me so many things throughout my life, and just opportunity being the biggest of them. Hey, here's an opportunity to fail or succeed and do with it what you will. And just having that has been great.
I am hoping the senior leadership there feels the same way, but like I love that feeling. And I hope I'm giving that to my leadership team too, because that's really what we want at the end of the day. Like, hey, I believe in you, I trust you, like run with this and don't prove me wrong, right? Like prove me right. And it's great to hear that, it's a company that will do that for you. I'm gonna go back to like the technical side of things. So let's talk about, new project, right? What do you think organizations, whether they're owners or construction managers or designers, and you could pick one of those if you want to get into a very specific, or you could use them all generally, but like, where do they need to start investing first to get the most predictable project outcomes? Because sometimes we'll see properties like identical, right? Like taking higher ed, for example, like not identical, but look identical, two similar projects. Two completely different outcomes, And so what's something that like we can invest in early on to make sure that the project outcomes are a little more predictable?
Honestly, I think it all comes down to the team. So designers are capable, builders are capable, managers are capable. It's can that group of entities now be a cohesive unit to get to that finish line? And I would say the most successful projects have that cohesive unit. And then the projects that aren't as successful are chasing cohesion all the way through. So if you're not lockstep with the owner's wishes, with the designer's design intent, with what the contractor is doing and what your team needs, then everybody's fighting each other all the way through. And we've all been on those projects. And it's like, you get that that gut check and the stomach flip when you're going to job site meetings of, boy, I wonder what today's going to bring because nobody's on the same page. But then you have the jobs and the job sites that are very successful, and the team cohesion is phenomenal, and everybody's marching in the same direction. And while we each all have our individual needs and wants out of a project, either from a corporate or economic perspective, but we remember what the end goal is, and the end goal is the project, and don't get consumed in that day to day of, I need to be right on something, or they got me yesterday, so I have to grab today. And so I would say team cohesion is really important.
I love that answer because it was not at all what I was expecting. I was expecting, like, I don't know, like a technology or, like BIM or, but I love the answer because it's so true. And it's like, invest in those, like that team bonding, right? And like, even though sometimes the CM, the builder, and the designer are all, I don't want to say adversarial, but they're not really on a team. But like, if you guys can get together in a room and start like really developing a relationship, you're right. The problems down the line get solved so much easier and faster because no one's in there for their ego. They're just like, oh no, I know, I know Larry. Larry's a great guy. Like, he's not coming at me from any other way than he just wants to build this right. And I also want to build this right. So I'm going to get him the answers he needs.
And honestly, I wish it were a technology thing that could be changed. And think about what a simple fix that would be if it was a project management software. Like, hey, if we put Procore on every single one of our projects, boom, they're successful. But again, it comes down to the people utilizing the technology. And if they're not doing it, then the project ends up failing. And we've all seen it over the years. Think about all the differing approaches and technologies that have come in and out of our industry. Whatever it may be, virtual design being the latest and greatest. And then we're evolving into the AI future and what that looks like. But again, at the end of the day, it really comes down to the people.
Well, you said AI, not me, but you got any thoughts? What it like, give me a minute or 30 seconds on AI. What do you think?
30 seconds, super excited about it. I honestly think there's a lot of I so we've talked about the volume of work quite a bit, but we all have quite a volume of work. And if AI were to help us with a lot of the busy work, that frees us up to be better managers and leaders and help supporting our teams. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see what it looks like today versus what it's going to look like 10 years from now. Just, yeah, I don't know that I have a good answer on
No, that's a great answer.
how it helps us, but I know it will. And then again, figuring out when to break that tool out and utilize it.
I would I'll go back to what I started the show with, which was the education event I went to, and they were talking about how they want to be AI enabled educators, and they were saying what's going to make it more powerful is not that they're going to get rid of any teachers. If anything, they're hoping to add more teachers, but there's going to be more human touch, more human connection, more human element in their educational programming because AI will do all the administrative work, right? Like the teacher can just super focus on the pupil and not focus on the pupil and the paperwork and all the policies they have to write or grade or whatever. And I think that's going to be similar for our industry. I think, yes, administrative burdensome work can get done. I don't think they're going to be able to replace true human ingenuity, right? And I don't think they're going to be able to replace the like human relationship and touch that we need, right, as part of projects.
Yeah, it's the perfect analogy. Think about your site superintendent. Let's just say 30% of his administrative workload was now being able to be handled by an AI-driven software, which allows them to be out on the site and guiding the subcontractors and discussing with the foreman, planning ahead. You now have 30% better performance out of your on-site representative. It's really going to be great.
So we're talking about the future. So what's one thing you hope the next generation of like builders will do better than our generation?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I guess probably just an overall being better. Taking all of the things that we've learned from the folks past that we're now passing down to them, that they'll pass down to the next generation. Just, the overall growth of the world that we want to get better every single day. I think it's very general in nature, but I think just being better in every aspect of what we do, trying to be more efficient, trying to deliver better for our clients and more timely and bringing costs down and letting the kind of industry evolve to, I mean, think about when you and I started in this industry and how different things were. And here we are,
Totally
you know,
different.
20 plus years later. I mean, I remember sitting there stamping in drawings, you know, quadruple copies and, you know, putting duct tape on the edges of plans. So seeing that evolution now where essentially everything is electronic now, and that helps this generation execute better. And then, you know, we look at AI potentially coming in, having the next generation execute even better. I think just the overall evolution of the industry is exciting.
I'm a big quotes guy, and one that I thought of based on what you just said is just like, I stand on the shoulders of giants that came before me. And I think it's true, right? Like every generation needs to just take what the prior generations have learned and taught them and grow and evolve and be better. It might sound general, but
But
it's
that's life in
very,
general, right? Like
yeah.
that's what we want out of every aspect of what we do.
So I shared a quote there with you. I'm a big quotes guy. Do you have like a quote or a mantra you live by or subscribe to?
A quote. So one thing that I took away from one of the leadership books that I've read, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, but explaining the why whatever the scenario is important, not necessarily to you, but important to the client. Or explaining the why to, you know, the why might be the subcontractor. This is why it's important that we get the shop drawings out of them. Or, I would say explaining the why has been something that is really on a daily basis, really pops into my head, and that works both, you know, up and managing up and managing down, because you know if your folks aren't confident in the direction you're headed, then they won't help you get there. And sometimes it's just a matter of helping them understand why it's important.
And that's one of those like evolutions of leadership too, right? Like, so like, I mean, up until very recently, if your boss had to do something, you couldn't ask him why. And if you did, the answer was just because I told you to, and that was good enough, right? Like that was the answer.
Yeah. In fact, you were scared to even ask, so.
Exactly. It's like they said to do. And you know what the sad part about it was? So much like wasted time, energy, and effort, because if the person had asked, they typically, especially frontline, like as you get closer to the true work being done, they have better solutions for what they're doing as long as someone's willing to listen to them.
Yes. In fact, they want to share it. And if you ask the follow-up questions, you can start. It's always interesting when you have a conversation with somebody that seems to not want to share information, and then you start asking follow-up questions, and all of a sudden it's like the floodgates open, and you can see the passion that they have for their answer, and you can really appreciate that you ask the follow-up questions.
All right, we are going to round out the show here with we call it Builder's Blitz. So we've talked about strategy, execution, leadership at a high level. Now I'm going to do like quick hit around design to reveal how great builders think under pressure. So I'm going to ask you a quick question and you say the first thing that comes to mind. Most overrated leadership buzzword.
Discipline.
Cool. A behavior every team should normalize.
Empathy.
Oh, wow. That's a big one. That's good. Long-term bet or quick win?
Long-term bet.
Nice. Well, those are my builder's blitz. You did great. I loved empathy. That's a really good one. I think EQ is becoming more and more important, you know, especially like we talked a lot about leadership and that journey and that on this episode. And empathy is a good way to build a great leadership trait because people want to know that you care and understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I'm halfway through a negotiation book right now, and the book is written by an FBI negotiator that was the, you know, their lead for the
Chris Voss.
hostage, Chris Voss. Yep,
Yeah,
lead.
I've read it.
Yeah.
To finish your story, but the
Yeah,
second.
but really, and what he talks about in all those negotiations is empathy. And it's a really interest it's been a very interesting perspective. But so you read it?
It's good.
It's good.
You know, and one of the things I learned from that real quick, and he says like, never meet in the middle, kind of like was is one of his
Yeah.
And
That's
I'm
the
like,
title of the book.
but that's all I do.
Because that was where we, that was where we, that was how we came up negotiating.
Yeah.
If someone's starting high, we're starting low, and we're just going to meet in the middle. And it's been a good book to realize that you can negotiate for more than that.
It's a good one, yeah. So, all right. Well, Larry, thank you so much for being
Yeah,
on
that was
the
awesome.
show. It's all the time we have for today. We'll include any resources we mentioned in the notes. And thanks again, everyone, for listening, and keep an eye out for our next episode.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. It's been exciting. Looking forward to doing it again if I get invited back, and looking forward to continued business together and working together.
For sure, Larry. It's no, I love. We gotta have lunch. We gotta celebrate. I'm sincerely. We gotta do that. So,
Absolutely.
we'll catch up after this for sure.
Sounds good. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Larry.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.